We're holding on page 68 in Sota Osainhei. We learned last time about how after the when Jewish people crossed the Yarden, we learned about how when the Jewish people crossed the Yarden and Yeshua, page 68 in Sota, how Yeshua told them to take 12 stones, and he told a group of people, to one from each shevet, to take 12 stones from the bed of the Yarden, and set them up in the Yarden itself as a monument where the Kohanim had stood when the waters split. And then in addition, there was another set, which we said they took to Har Evel and wrote the Torah on them, which the Gemara is going to go into detail about those stones later on, and then they took those stones and brought them to Gilgal. So we talked about actually previously whether the thing on Har Gerizim and Har Evel, whether that was that day. There's an opinion it was only many years later. So how many sets of stones were there that we're dealing with over here? It's either two or three. In any case, so we said that the 12 men are each supposed to carry one stone, and ultimately they would bring them to Gilgal, which was the first place that they stayed that first night after they crossed the Yarden, and they're going to be set up as a monument there forever. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Abba Chalafta, V'Rabbi Elazar ben Masya, V'Chananya ben Chachinai, so these three Chachamim, Omdu'al Oysan Avonim. They considered, they looked at these stones. Now, Omdu'al literally means they stood on. But even Yaakov says doesn't literally mean they stood on the stones. You wouldn't be able, the point is to tell the size of them. You wouldn't be able to tell the size of them by standing on them. It means in Gemara terminology, Lamod Al means to consider, means to evaluate. So they evaluated, they looked at these stones to figure out, to estimate their weight. The Halachas Shi'uru Masi Memsa. They evaluated that each one of them is 40 saw weight. Strictly speaking, a saw is a measure of volume, not of weight, but the point is, in other words, however you would define the equivalent weight of a saw, they calculated that each stone was 40 saw in weight. So in other words, these guys must have been very strong, because 40 saw, no matter what, whatever it is you're talking 40 saw of, is a considerable amount. If you're talking about water, for example, 40 saw is a sheer mikveh. You have the different opinions among poskim how much that would amount to, anywhere between about 80 and 250 gallons. If you're talking about of various other materials, it would be more or less, as the case may be, but it would still be quite a bit for each person to carry. Now, Ugmiri. Now, we know the Kabbalah, the Chol Ta'una, the Madli Inish L'Kasve, anything that a person lifts up onto his own shoulder, tilted the Ta'uni Havoi, that in turn is only one third of what he can carry when he's carrying with other people. First of all, because the other people help carry the load, and also Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi. When a person is carrying something on his own, he needs to lift it up from the ground to all the way to his shoulders, whereas when he's carrying it together with other people, then they help him with that part of it as well. So therefore, the result, in other words, if a person can carry 40 saw individually, as here, each of these 12 men had to carry 40 saw-sized stones, each one on their shoulder, then it means that if a bunch of people are working together, then each one of them can carry 120 saw. Mikan at machashiv la eshkol. Therefore, you can use that to calculate the size of the cluster of grapes that the Meraglim brought back from Eretz Yisrael. And you can see, in other words, it was a gigantic cluster. Shenema, now the Pasuk says, Vayisa'uhu b'moit b'shnoyim. The Pasuk says they carried it with a pole with two. Now, on the face of it, you would just think that means that they two people carried a pole with a bunch of grapes hanging from it. You ever look at the logo of, I think, Kedem has exactly that. It shows two people carrying a pole with a cluster of grapes hanging from it. But, what? Okay, Carmel, maybe it is, I don't remember, one of the wine companies, whatever, anyway. But the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Mimash Mashanema Bamoit, once it says Bamoit with a pole, any Yadeshu Bishnayim, wouldn't that automatically mean that it's two, because you need one person to carry each end of the pole? One point is, a couple of them Mephoshim make over here is, not necessarily. The fact is, it is possible for one person to carry a pole by himself on his shoulders, like water carriers in olden times. So rather, Rashi learned, the one Girsa in Rashi says, rather, Iyun Yaakov mentions another way, or not Iyun Yaakov, Eitz Yosef mentions another way, is because it says, Vayisa'uhu, they carried it. So they automatically means two people. So there's no reason to mention Bishnayim. Or Ma Tamad Lema Bishnayim. So what does it mean, two? It means Mishnei Moitos, means that there are two poles. So there are two poles, and that means a minimum at least of four people involved. So, but now on top of that, you have, Marshall brings a different point. Well, there are many different explanations of what exactly it means. We'll get to it in a second. But the point is, so there are two poles. So I'm going to be talking Malamat Shnei Motes for you. And not only that, not only was it two poles, Trutini, the Trutini, the Trutini. There was a load and then a load of a load. Meaning Rashi describes, or Rashi and all the Mephoshim describe that it means, in other words, that we're not just talking, there are two poles. In other words, they had to have a whole framework over here to be able to carry this very heavy cluster of grapes. The point that we're saying, we're going to go on to say, eight of the Meraglim carried the cluster, and again, like we just said, since each person can carry 120 saw when he's doing it together with other people, means they had a cluster of grapes there that weighs, that's the volume of 960 saw. So that would be a couple of tons. So in other words, the point there, Yitzchak is saying, is it wasn't just they had two poles, they actually had some kind of interlacing or overlapping poles. So Rashi explains, and the point is, in order to have eight people, we're assuming each person carries an end of a pole. The Pashtus, we're not going to assume that somebody is holding the middle of the pole, we're going to assume that everybody's carrying one end, so that requires, therefore, that there are four poles in order to have eight ends. So there's many, many different explanations. Rashi gives an explanation over here that mentions that you have two poles, you have two poles and then two others, Vehem Ba'alachsen, they're on an angle, they're on a slant under the bottom two. So there's a huge number of ways of understanding what Rashi means. The printed Gemaras have a diagram in Rashi that show basically two poles going this way and two going this way, so like a double X. So like two poles forming an X and then two others crossing them. So you have like two strokes for this part of the X and two for this part. Then you have there's a lot of other different explanations what Rashi means, including that the Meiri understands Rashi as it being more like a tic-tac-toe board. And then you have several other different explanations of Rashi. Tosfos brings a whole different explanation that what it means is basically they looked like two capital letters H, a long pole, and then two short poles attached to the sides of each one, and then a similar one like that, and they had them going one next to the other, and then they carried it like that. Some of the Mephoshim say that they also attached them together with one pole to hold the two H's together, and there's like a dozen different explanations, and in the back of the Gemara, in Marsha and Marshal, and the other Mephoshim in the back, you have various other diagrams that different Mephoshim give. The point is, in other words, however it was, they had eight people sharing the load between them. Tosfos, by the way, also discusses, first of all, Tosfos says it wouldn't have just been individual poles or frames like that. They would have woven them together with ropes or something, because just sticks by them, just poles by themselves, wouldn't be enough to hold this cluster of grapes and get it intact all the way from Eretz Canaan to the desert. Tosfos also points out there are other opinions anyway, how many people carried this cluster. Here our Gemara is saying that eight of the Meraglim did it. But Tosfos first of all, from Yerushalmi, that actually there is a possibility. Tosfos brings an interesting idea, the Pasuk says, ish echad, l'mati avoysav, one person from each shevet. Now, the simple meaning, you would say, ish echad, the double expression just means from each shevet, one. That's the common way of the Torah talking. Rabbi Akiva, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Akiva holds double expressions like that, means double as many. So, according to Rabbi Akiva, there weren't 12 meraglim, there were actually 24. And according to that, then 16 are carrying the cluster of grapes. So even more than it says in Or Gemara. Then there were different other opinions. Ion Yaakov brings from Tana Dveil Yahu that there were that all 12 of them were carrying the cluster of grapes. And then there are different other possibilities. As Zoya actually says, that it was only Yeshua and Kalev were carrying the cluster of grapes. We're going to talk in a second. The Gemara Or Gemara is going to say that Fakert, Yeshua and Kalev didn't carry any of the fruit, but the Zoya says the other way around. Only they carried. So it comes out, Shmoina Nosu Eshkol, so eight of the Meraglim carried this cluster of grapes, and again, that shows how gigantic the cluster was, that it took eight of them to carry it with that kind of framework. Shnayim, and then two others, Echad Nosu Rimon, Ve'echad Nosu Teina, one had to carry a pomegranate all by himself, because again, the pomegranates are also much larger than normal, and one of them carried a fig for the same reason. Now that makes 10 meraglim. What about the other two? Yeshua and Kalev didn't carry anything. My time, why not? Ibosem and Rashim Dachashivi, one is because they're important. Out of the Meraglim, they actually had the closest connection to Moshe. Kolev is actually Yeshua, is actually Moshe's brother-in-law. He was married to Miriam, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, and Yeshua was Moshe's personal Talmud. But in addition, I mean, there's other reasons. I mean, in the end, of course, they ended up being the important ones. They're the ones who didn't go in with the Eitzah of the Meraglim. Marsha explains Marsha explains the intention should have been that Moshe should pick all the Meraglim in the event the Nisim of the Shvatim picked the Meraglim. So now that was why Moshe was concerned that they might go bad because he himself didn't pick them, but Yeshua and Kolev apparently were the most distinguished of the bunch. Anyway, so that's one reason. The other reason is because they weren't involved in that plot. Why are the Meraglim bringing back this gigantic fruit? Because, as we're going to learn later on, they wanted to say, just like the fruit is unusually gigantic, so are the people of Eretz Yisrael, and we're not going to be able to conquer them. So Yeshua and Kolev realized what's going on, and therefore they didn't want to get involved with that. Now, this is Sifah, actually, where the Rebbe talks about, Moshe had told them to bring fruit, or lakachta mikriya aretz. So how are Yeshua and Kolev violating that? And in fact, there's a medrash, actually, that says, at first the Meraglim didn't want to bring any fruit. They didn't want to say anything good about Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua and Kolev threatened them, and therefore now they decided, you know, in English they have something called malicious compliance. You're going to make me do something? Then fine, I'm definitely going to do it in the way that will cause the most harm. So now the Meraglim decide, fine, if we have to bring the fruit, then we're definitely going to bring it in a way that's going to scare the Jewish people. Anyway, so at that point, Yeshua and Kolev weren't going to bring any more, so the Rebbe points out in the Sicha, the message of it is, as much as the whole story of the Meraglim, you have the famous explanation in Chassidus that it represents the whole story, shows us the importance of Maisa Mitzvahs. The Meraglim want to stay in the Midbar and they don't want to be involved in practical day-to-day mitzvahs because they want to continue learning Torah in the Anan Yaakov and eating the mon and so forth. And the message is that that's wrong and you have to go and make a Dida B'tachtonim. So Maisa is important, but after all, the Kavana of the Maisa is important as well. And therefore, when the Meraglim are going to do the Maisa of bringing the fruit, but in a way that's going to harm things, it's going to do to scare the Jewish people, then Yeshua and Kolev correctly assess that we can't do that, therefore we're not going to bring the fruit. Next. So that explains as far as the fruit. So the Gemara is now going to get soon back to the matter of the Meraglim, but first let's finish off with a detail about the crossing of the Yarden that we started learning about before. Now, we said before there were two different opinions what happened to the water of the Yarden. So first we had, we know the water of the Yarden split and they crossed through on dry land. But how exactly did it split? We had Rabbi Yehuda saying that the water piled up into it's as if like a dam had been put in the water. And so the water that's coming downstream, downstream in the Yarden, is all of a sudden getting stopped at a certain point. And then Rabbi Huda says it's starting to pile up higher and higher and become a column of 12 mil. Actually, the Gemara had said, v'kama roichvan or goivan shomayim, we had two different girsos. Rashi's girsa was that kama goivan shomayim, how tall was it? So in other words, it started piling up as though like behind a barrier over there and reached a height of 12 mil, says Rabbi Huda. Marsha had learned differently. Marsha says that it means that the water flowed backwards a distance of 12 mil. Anyway, that was Rabbi Huda, but then Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon pointed out, wait a minute, the whole Machne Yisrael is 12 mil, is 12 mil in size, and water flows faster than people can walk. So how are they going to get across before the water starts coming back? So rather, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon learns that the water started piling up more and more until it reached over 300 mil. And that way everybody in Eretz Yisrael saw it, and all the Canaanim were terrified about it. So now, getting back to that point, the Gemara says, "Pligimur of Ami v'Rab Yitzchak Napcha." So now, within that Machloikas Tanoim, Rab Ami and Rab Yitzchak Napcha argue, what is this, what is the implication of this Machloikas about the formation in which the Jewish people traveled when they crossed the Yarden? So Chad Omer, one of them says, L'divrei of Yehuda, Kachane Yosen Avru, it would come out, one of them says, according to the Yehuda, it means that they crossed the Yarden in the same way as they camped. When they camped, Machne Yisrael, the Gemara explains elsewhere, was 12 by 12 mil. So therefore, so the entire column of people walking through was 12 mil in length. So therefore, according to W.S.W. Hordez say, and therefore that they only needed, the water only needed to pile up to 12 mil, okay, a little more than 12 mil, but not quite 13, and that would be enough, and that would prevent them from being flooded when the water starts flowing normally again. The digger of Elazar ben Reb Shimon, whereas according to Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon, who says, wait a minute, then that doesn't leave them enough time to cross safely, then it would have to be that they're going bezachazeh, they're going single file. Tosfos has some discussion about it over here, that even Tosfos argues that even if we're saying kachana yosan avru, even if we're going to say they cross in the same way as they did when they were camping, it can't mean literally that they're keeping the same 12 by 12 mil formation. For first, the yardin itself is only 50 amas wide, and they have to have, we learned before, there was the whole speech that Yeshua gave them, and that the Kohenim are telling them, and so on and so forth, and how are they going to do that if they're all going to be crossing using in that 12 mil long formation. So Tosfos says, even according to the opinion, kachana yosan avru would mean basically that they're collapsing down the 12 by 12 mil and walking way and walking a huge width of people across, but in such a way that they can all fit within the 50 amos width of the yardin. Whereas the Zachazeh would mean maybe not single file. Tosfos says fine, it would mean in much narrower columns than that, like maybe 10 people abreast or something. Now, Shah has a long discussion of it and says that, first of all, Tosfos' objections about that, first of all, if they're not all standing in the Yarden at the same time that Yeshua is giving a speech, big deal. Maybe Yeshua and Kohenim are standing in different places, strategically placed throughout all the place where they're crossing, and they're all announcing. So each group that's within earshot of a particular speaker will hear it from them. So that's not a big deal. Anyway, so that's one way of looking at it. V'chad Omar, so therefore, in other words, so now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, therefore, they're crossing in such a way where they only need a 12 mils distance, or a little over 12 mil, to get across, allowing a little extra time for Yeshua's speech, and for all of them, for the people to get the stones and all of that, and therefore the water didn't need to reach a height or a backwards flow of much more than 12 mil, whereas according to Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon, who's saying that they went in single file, or in 10 abreast, or whatever, then it would mean it took them a lot longer to cross, so therefore the water would have had to pile up to a much larger height. The Chad Omer, the other one between the Amoraim, says, Bein l'Rabbi Yehuda, Bein l'Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, Kachana Yosan Avru. You don't have to say that. You could say both of them agree that they went Kachana Yosan. They both went in the same 12 mil formation, or as Tosfos says, collapsed down so that they can all fit within the width of the Yarden at the same time. Or as Marashah says, that may not be necessary because you have different announcers in different places. Mihu, but the machlokas would be Mar Sava Odom Kal. Rabbi Yehuda holds that people can walk just as fast as water flows, and after all, different rivers have different degrees of flow. Some rivers flow faster than others. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is not so bothered by the fact that the river would only be, that the water would be piling up or backing up to 12 or to 12 mil or 12 and a half mil or whatever, because fine, as long as people can walk, if they can walk 12 mil, then that still gives them enough time to get across before the water comes down. Ma'asava Mayim Kalim, whereas Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon holds that water goes faster, and therefore they would have needed a much larger amount of time, and therefore he needs the water to have piled up to 300 mil. So different ways of understanding. There are different ways of understanding, and again, according to Marashah, we're saying that Bechlal, not necessarily. According to Rashi's way of understanding, they're both agreeing the water piled up. The question is how high. According to Marashah's way of learning, according to the Yehuda, the cloud didn't pile up; it just backed up. Well, part of the difference could be, in other words, when they were talking about whether the water travels faster than people, would be whether we're talking about it flowing in the normal way down the river downstream, or whether we're talking about coming down from that pile up there. It would be that would also affect the speed of the water. Okay. So now we're going to get into going back to the Meraglim. Now the Gemara is going to spend some time discussing all the ins and outs of the story of the Meraglim, and eventually then we're going to get back to the story of the crossing of the Yarden. So the pasuk starts off. Hashem tells Moshe, "Shlach lecha anoshim v'yasuru, send yourself men and let them go spy out Eretz Yisrael." So what's this lecha? Amar Shlach is Shlach lecha l'daitcha. Means send it. If you send it as you wish, I'm not commanding you. I'm not commanding you to do it. After all, would a person choose a bad portion for himself? So Rashi explains. The question is, That, and Rashi points out, by the way, when we're here in Parshas Shlach, you don't have the background why they're sending Meraglim in the first place, but Moshe explains it in Chumash Devarim. He says that the Tikru of Anelai Kochem, you all came and approached me and said we need to send spies. So therefore, Hashem tells Moshe, listen, if you think it's a good idea, then go ahead, I'm not going to stop you. Now, Klum Yash Odom, V'chi Odom Bura Chelek Ra'al Atzmoy, Rashi explains, the question would be, we have to say it like that. We have to say that Hashem is not commanding Moshe to send them, because otherwise Hashem knows the future. How would Hashem tell them to do something which is going to end in disaster like that? So therefore, we have to necessarily understand that Hashem is not commanding him to do it. That's Rashi. Marsha doesn't like that explanation. And he says that no, what it means is Hashem had chosen Eretz Yisrael as the land where the Jewish people are going to settle. Of course, Hashem is not going to choose a bad land for that purpose. So the question is really on the Jewish people. Why are they asking for Meraglim? Do they not realize that if Hashem chose Eretz Yisrael, necessarily it must be a good land, and they have no reason to need to go to check it out? So then why? And the question would be then, when in that case, why is Moshe agreeing to send Meraglim in the first place? So there are a lot of different explanations then what exactly, so what was Moshe thinking? If Hashem himself is telling him, I'm not telling you to send them, then shouldn't Moshe realize himself there's something wrong over here? Refract, according to what we're saying over here, that Moshe should realize the land is very good. So Rashi on the Pasuk actually mentions that that where Moshe is telling them in Parshas Devarim, he says, you know why I agreed? Because I figured if I agree, then you're going to say, you know what, then obviously he's willing for us to kick the tires, and therefore why do we need to? You know, Rashi brings a marshal over there, a person is selling a donkey, you nowadays you'd sell, he's selling a car, and the guy wants to take it for a test drive, and this and that and the other, and then whatever he says, sure, gives him to hate, so therefore, so the potential buyer realizes, you know, and obviously the seller has nothing to hide, so I may as well just buy it as is. So Moshe figures, if he tells them you can send Meraglim, gives him to hate, then they'll say, you know what, then if Moshe is willing to do it, then obviously he has nothing to hide. Eretz Yisrael must indeed be very good. Then Marsha brings over here from the Ramban that the idea, and Marsha explains it at greater length, that the idea is Moshe figured, sure, we can send Meraglim, but not so much in order to check whether Eretz Yisrael is good. Of course, we know Eretz Yisrael is good, but just to reconnoiter, just in order to check what's the most effective way, that's a derech hashanala ball, what's the best way to get into Eretz Yisrael, what place should we conquer first. We find 40 years later, Yeshua did the same thing. He sent 2 Meraglim. But, so that was the idea. Moshe figured that all he needs to do is send 2 Meraglim. So his intention would have been to do like Yeshua did many years later and send 2 Meraglim who are answerable only to him. And their job would be not so much to find out whether Eretz Yisrael is good, but just to check what's the strategic point, what's the weak point of Eretz Yisrael. Meanwhile, the Jewish people didn't like that, and they demanded one Meragel for each Shevet, and then the idea was that they would report to their Shevet, and that's where the trouble began. The Malbim also actually in Sefer Yeshua, when it tells about both in Parshas Shlach and in Sefer Yeshua, when it tells about these 12 Meraglim and when it tells about Yeshua's Meraglim 40 years later, he points out, and earlier Mephoshim, the Abba Benel, others point out a whole bunch of differences between them, that 12 versus 2 answerable to Yeshua or Moshe versus answerable to the whole Jewish people, what exactly their mission is, and so on and so forth, where the idea is Moshe's intention, according to that, was indeed just to send ones who will do that, and meanwhile the Jewish people altered that and demanded Meraglim of their own, one for each Shevet. And Marsha goes on to say as well that the idea was Moshe originally figured he would pick the Meraglim, and instead the Shvatim demanded that the Nesiim of the respective Shvatim pick the Meraglim. So the Pasuk continues, thus the Pasuk says, Vayita be'enai hadavar. Moshe, when he's telling the story over in Parshas Devarim, he says, the matter was good in my eyes, Amar Eshlokesh be'enai, v'loi be'enai amokam, means it was good in my eyes, but not in Hashem's eyes, because Hashem was hinting that we shouldn't do it. There's also a sikha, actually, where the Rebbe talks about the idea behind it, so still, you have to ask, but once they're demanding that they should have 12 Meraglim and so forth, why doesn't Moshe realize that obviously there's something wrong over here? So the Rebbe develops the idea, given the whole point of going into Eretz Yisrael, is they're going to start doing Avoida B'Koyach Atzmam, rather than the Avoida with Isserusa B'L'Elil, they're doing the exclusively, that they're doing in the Midbar, so Moshe figures this is the first stage of it, Hashem is leaving it up to them, is leaving it up to Moshe, and to the Jewish people to decide, is this the right course of action? Because that's going to be the first stage of doing their own avodah and making a deal of a tachtonim. And Moshe didn't know that it's going to end up what happened. So the Gemara continues, Amar Shlokish. So now the pasuk continues that the Jewish people demanded the Yachperu Lanu Asaretz. They should dig up the land for us. So the simple meaning of the Yachperu means, in other words, they should dig around, they should search around and spy out the details of Eretz Yisrael. But the Gemara says there's another meaning of that word for Yachperu as well. Amar Abchiva Abba, Amar Abiyachon and Meraglim and Eskavnu Alolah Boishta Shal Eretz Yisrael. The Meraglim are looking only to speak embarrassing things, shameful things about Eretz Yisrael. To begin with, it actually says actually when they first asked for Meraglim, their intention was to find out the worst things about Eretz Yisrael. And how do we know that? Ksivach of a Yachperu Lanos Aretz Uchtivasim B'chofra Halavona or Halavona Uvoisha Hachama. We find a pasuk that says that in Mashiach's times the sun and the moon will be ashamed, like their light will be dimmed compared to the light of the Shekhinah. So therefore we see B'chofra is a word meaning embarrassment, and the same way for Yachperu Lanos Aretz, it signifies that they were looking, that the Jewish people were demanding Meraglim who are going to tell them the worst features of Eretz Yisrael. Ian Yaakov points out that there are other psukim that have the word v'chofra also meaning, or that have that shirdish also meaning embarrassed, but the point is, in all those other places, you could say it means people getting embarrassed. By this v'chofra alavano, v'oshachama, you see it means that even inanimate objects, like the sun and moon, can be described with the shirdish chofar, and the same way, therefore, that justifies the Gemara understanding that it means the embarrassment of Eretz Yisrael. With that said, v'chofra alavono v'osha hacham, also Rashi, I think, mentions on the pasuk over there in Yeshaya that it does have a meaning of the people. The people who worship the sun and moon are going to be embarrassed that they ever did such things. Fine. Next, the pasuk says ve'elo shmoisem. So the pasuk lists their names, the matir uvan shamua ben zakur, and it goes through the names and the father's names of all 12 of the meraglim. Rabbi Yitzchak says, we have the following Masoda in our hands from our ancestors. Meraglim al shem maaseim nikru. The Meraglim are named after their deeds. In other words, the names of the Meraglim hint to what kind of people they were and what they did. One thing is, Marashal says, because the pasuk says twice. First it says ve'elo shmoisem and gives their names, and then it continues elo shmois ha'anoshim. So it's like as if to hint to you, now that you have these 24 names, 12 names of Meraglim, 12 names of their fathers, now elo shmois ha'anoshim, pay attention to these names, and you're going to learn from them something about what kind of people these were. Different other explanations is because also, for example, it says the Eilish, Eitz Yosef points out the Eilish Shmoisim. It says, and these are their names. And the usual rule is when it says Ushmoi before the name, usually it means it's Tzadik. And here, 10 of the 12 of them wound up being Rishoyim. So we're meant to understand, in other words, that's because of this is a special case because these names are these names are telling us something about what they did. However, Rabbi Yitzchak says, we've gotten in our hands, we only know, Rashi says, we know how to darshan, only one of those pairs of names, Sisur ben Michoel, the name of the Meraglo from Shevet Osher, whose name was Sisur ben Michoel. And why is he called that? Sisur, Shesosar Maisev Shalakodesh Baruch Hu. He sosar the deeds of Hashem. So Rashi explains sosar means to deny. So he denied the words of Hashem and claimed that Hashem is chas v'shalom a liar. So that would be sisur. And ben Michal should also soine moch. He made his enemy, a euphemism for Hashem himself, weak. In other words, he claimed that Hashem doesn't have the power, as the Gemara is going to say later on, to get the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael and get the Knanim out of there. So that one name, Sisur ben Michal. That's how Rashi learns. Marsha doesn't like that explanation. So instead he says that Sisur, fine, what can mean? Sisur then, so again, according to Rashi, the word is that Sisur is Meloshin like a stira, like to deny. Marsha says Sur can also be Meloshin hiding, Meloshin seser, hiding and covering. So this Sisur ben Michal, covered up and hid the nisim that Hashem had done all this time. Like this also, Rashi's explanation would fit better with an alternate girsa that you find in some Tisva Yad of the Gemara, not Shasasa Maisa, but Shasasa Dvorav. So then it would mean that he denied the words of Hashem. But Marashal says, with the girsa that we have over here, Maisav would fit better with an explanation that Sisur means that he covered over and pretended as though he didn't know of all the Maisim, all the Nisim that Hashem had done so far. Otherwise, how could he say? How could he possibly say, we can't go up into Eretz Yisrael, they're too strong for us. Are they stronger than Pare and company? And Michal, Sha'al Sa'atmimach, would be that he's claiming that Hashem doesn't have the ability to give them food in Eretz Yisrael. Moch means poor, means in particular lacking in basic necessities, Maharsha explains later on when they brought the fruit. It was not only in order, Maharsha explains later on, it was not only they wanted to say the fruit is gigantic and so are the people gigantic, they're also claiming falsely that Eretz Yisrael, fine, it has grapes and figs and things like that, but you can't live on grapes and figs. You need wheat, you need oil, things like that, and they claim that Eretz Yisrael is lacking in those things. So therefore, so that would also be that he made Hashem, that he pretended as though Hashem is weak and doesn't have the ability to give them food. So that's the one says Rabbi Yitzchak that has come down to us that we're able to darshan. Om Rabbi Yochanan says, Af Anu Noimar, we can also say, meaning either Rabbi Yochanan had the Kabbalah, another one, or that he says we can come up with a drosha for another one on our own. Here's another one of the Meraglim, Nachbi Ben Vofsi. Another one of the Meraglim, named Nachbi Ben Vofsi, so we can darshan, Nachbi Shehechbi Dvarav Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, that he hid the words of Hashem, meaning, so Rashi says it means he didn't say the words of Hashem as they're supposed to be. Instead, he made up his own ideas. And Vofsi would be Shepisal Midos of Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He stepped over and jumped over the Midos of Hashem and did not say them the way they were supposed to be said. So that's another one that we can darshan. That's Rashi. Maharsha gives a different explanation. Nachbi Shehechbi Dvarav Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be that he doesn't believe that here Hashem had said it's a good land, and he didn't believe in that, and he pretended as though that those words are hidden and unknown to him. And Pisal Midos of Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hashem's midah, it's to reward people who trust in Hashem, and he and vice versa, that Hashem punishes those who don't believe him. And here this Nachbi Ben Vofsi did not act that way. He pretended as though none of that is true. Now there's a sicha where the Rebbe analyzes further this point. First of all, what's this point? It's not like we don't have drushes for the other one. There are medrushim, in fact, that give drushes for all 12 of the names and all 12 of the father's names. So why is Rabbi Yitzchak saying that we only have the one? And what does Rabbi Yitzchak mean by adding another one? So the Rebbe develops the idea in the Sicha that Rabbi Yitzchak doesn't mean we know only of one that we can darshan. It means our fathers, now again, the whole point with the Meraglim is to stress that they, you know, we have mice of a poil. They thought that it's enough to just have looning Torah sitting there in the desert. And the point was instead that we need to go into Eretz Yisrael and then work the land and all and then do it, make a did of a tachtonim. So Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, Abiseinu, our ancestors then, they were on a higher level. Their Maisa Mitzvah was tied up with their learning Torah. So therefore, they could learn from the names of all of the Meraglim, the mistake the Meraglim were making to think that Torah is fine by itself without Maisa Mitzvah. We, who are on a lower level, like all of Biyadenu, that comes only in our hand, meaning for us, Maisa B'Poyel is the more important thing. So for us, out of all those Diroshas, the only one that's Negeya, as far as our Maisa B'Poyel, is the one with Sur Ben Michal. And so that explains, the word sesur doesn't mean, like Rashi says, to deny, and it doesn't mean, like Maharsha says, to cover. Rather, it means to destroy, to wreck. So shesosa maisim shalach kodesh baruch hu, he tried to wreck the maisim of Hashem. Hashem's maisim are that there should be a dira b'tachtonim, that there's a world out there to go and nipoil on, and he tried to wreck that and to pretend that that's not important. And Michal, and what makes that possible? Sha'osa asmei moch, the fact that Hashem created a world with tzimtzumim and makes it that there is a gashmiistic world in the first place with sparks of kedusha in it, which we need to elevate, and that's what makes it possible for there to be a situation like that where there needs to be a world that needs to be dealt with, and that you can have a sasur ben Michal make the mistake of thinking that that's unnecessary. Then comes Rabbi Yochanan and says, here's another one that's appropriate for us. About Nachbi Ben Vofsi, Shehechbi Dvarav Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would mean that you have the words of Hashem that keep the world running, and he hides that and pretends that that's not important. And Shepisal Midos of Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he thinks you can skip Midos and relate to Hashem only on the level of Moichin, and that's wrong, which in other words, through Torah, and that's wrong because the Midos and working with the world are important.
Can we say free will, has the Meraglim been successful?
Yeah, had they been successful, of course, we would darshan their names differently, yeah. Because there's a medrash, actually, that says there are people sometimes who have names with ugly connotations, but then they do something good, and now their names instead can be seen as representing something positive. So, yeah, definitely. There's also actually there's an interesting explanation from Rabbi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, that also Shelzich and the Sassur ben Michal over here, the Rabbi Levitch develops the idea over there that the Meraglim are related to Olam HaToyhu. They want to remain in Olam HaToyhu. They're not interested in dealing with the Birurim of Olam HaTikun, and therefore, in that sense, Shesosa Ma'aseh Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he wants to wreck the whole world of Tikun and go back to the world of Toyhu. So therefore, he's called Sassur, and ben Michal is that you have so to speak, you can have moch, literally means like sagging. So you have a ceiling is starting to sag when it's starting to collapse, and then eventually it collapses completely. So like you have the initial stages of what leads to Olam HaToyhu, and then you have the actual breakage and wreckage of Olam HaToyhu. So he comes from Michal to also Sonei Moch, in the sense like you have that sagging, like you see that Olam HaToyhu is starting to give way, and eventually it completely collapses, and that's Sassur. By the way, you have actually, you know, it talks about in Chassidus that the name of the various names, Ma, Ban, etc., the one that has to do with Shvir Sakelim is Sag. So very interesting that in English that word would be sagging. Then he points out, you know, there's the Gemara in Baba Basra, you have the story with Rav Baba Chana seeing the Meisei Midbar lying there in the desert and looking like they're drunk. The expression in the Gemara over there is that look, commanding Mivsimi, it looked like they were drunk. The word Mivsimi, the shortish of it, Beis Samach Mem, is the initials of Sisur, rearranged, of Sisur Ben Michal, because that name sums up, as Rabbi Yitzchak is saying, that sums up the whole mistake of the Meraglim. Onward. The Pasuk says, Vayalu Vanegev Vayovei Ad Chevron. The Pasuk says the Meraglim went up and through the south of Eretz Yisrael. Remember that they're in the desert, which is south of Eretz Yisrael. They were in Kodesh Barnea. So they went there, so they came through the south, and he came to Chevron. So why did he? Vayavoyumi Borilei should say they came. This teaches us that Kolev separated himself from the advice, from the plots of the Meraglim, and he went to prostrate himself on the graves of the Ovis, in the Maris of Achbela. He said to them, Avois Ha'olam, fathers of the world, Bakshu Alai Rachmim, Davin for Rachmim for me, She'enotzal Ma'asas Meraglim, that I should be saved from the ideas of the Meraglim, meaning, Kolbi Deshamayim, Chutzmi Deshamayim, but a person is entitled to ask for Siyata Deshamaya in it. There's a sikh actually where the Rebbe talks about why the expression Atsas Meraglim, and why Moshe also uses that expression, as Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, Ko Yashiachem Atsas Meraglim, because it all starts with where they have ideas of their own. The whole thing, it didn't begin with that they were to show him right away, but it started with they had an agenda of their own, an Eitzah of their own, and eventually one thing led to another, and eventually they became what they became. So therefore, Sokolev is davening for himself, and Moshe is davening for Yeshua, that you should be saved from getting involved in that personal agenda of the Meraglim, their Eitzah in the first place, and rather have complete bitter. So he's davening for that. Now why did only Kolev do that? Yeshua kvar bikush Moshe all of Rachamim. As far as Yeshua, Moshe had already davened for Rachamim for him before they left. So therefore, he doesn't need to go to the Maris Machpela. Shenema vayikra Moshe lo Yishev bin Nun Yehoshua. So why that? Omaloi ko Yeshua hametzas meraglim. He said Hashem should save you from the advice of the spies. Meaning, in other words, again, Moshe didn't know at that time that they're going to be Rishoyim. But nevertheless, he's davening for him that he should have special siyata d'shmaya to be saved from anything that the spies might come up with. So he added the yud to his name in token of that tefillah. Now Shah explains over here, like we were saying before, that the idea was originally there should have been only two meraglim, and they would have been Kolev and Yeshua. Now you have it should have been Kolev and Pinchas, actually, just like we're 40 years later when Yeshua sent his meraglim, that his two meraglim were Kolev and Pinchas. That's how it should have been this time as well. But now the point was each shevet that has a nachla in Eretz Yisrael wanted their representative. So now, so they didn't want a representative from Levi, because Levi doesn't have a territory in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, instead, they demanded one from each Shevet that's getting a territory. So therefore, so now, when they picked Yeshua, Moshe has to be worried. He was picked by the Nossi of Shevet Ephraim. He might also go and mess up, like the other Meraglim, and therefore he adds him a name, for a letter from Hashem's name, to daven on his behalf. And now that way, his name begins with three letters of Hashem's name, and Yehuda has the same thing. Yehuda, the ancestor of Kalev, has the same thing, and that will protect them. So that way, at least you'll have two good meraglim among the other ones. Different Mephoshim talk about various other reasons why Moshe had to daven specifically for Yeshua. One thing is because Yeshua was his Talmud, and if he goes bad, then it'll reflect much, much more badly on Moshe than anybody else. Also, Yeshua comes from Shevet Yosef, and Yosef, way back in the day, said Lashon Hara about his brothers, and therefore Yeshua, more than almost any of the others, has a natural inborn tendency to that. So Moshe has to daven that Hashem should help him. But Eva makes a point as well that since Yeshua is going to be the leader of the next generation, and Moshe knew that already from Eldon and Medan from the previous parasha, therefore he has special reason to daven for him that he should understand the importance of avodah b'poel, which is, after all, again, the mistake of the other menaglim, and therefore not to get caught up into that.
It's also the tree first letter.
That's right. So that's the Marshal points out that Yosef also had a letter of Hashem's name added eventually as well, as we're going to learn later in the parak. Yeah. But yeah, the point is that now Yehoshua and Yehuda both begin with the first three letters of Hashem's name, and that way at least that makes it more likely that those two meraglim, at least out of the 12, will be successful. This whole thing, by the way, about that was saying that he went to daven by the Mount Machpelah, there's an enormous amount of discussion about that among Rishonim. Like this, we always take it as a given. Sure, everybody goes to the oil, everybody goes to Kibri Tzadikim all the time to daven. It's actually not so simple. There are quite a few opinions among Rishonim that say that you shouldn't do that. There's a Rishon, Reb Chaim Paltiel, that the Bach brings, who says you shouldn't be doing that. It would be like Dodo Shalom Mason. So there's a variety of different explanations according to that way of looking at it. Kolev is not so much going to ask the others for anything. He's going to daven by the Kaver because of Mokim Kaddish, but he's davening direct to the Eibishter, not appealing to the others at all. So according to that, when he's saying over here, Avos Ha'olam Bakshu Al Rachamim, it wouldn't be exact. It just means that he's asking Hashem to help him in those chus. Then there are a lot of different Rishonim and Achronim that talk about that there is reason to say you could even ask the Mesim, you ask them to be good to betters for you, as we know the Lashon, it does mention in Shulchan Aruch and in various other places, you have to be careful not to think that the tzaddik has any power of his own, but rather that he's your mumutza mechaber between you and the Eibishter, and not that he's doing anything on his own, similar to the whole point about when you talk to Malachim and ask them to bring your tefillahs to the Eibishter, as we learned about previously. Then on top of that, you have the piece from Zohar that we say in Mayim Loshen, where some of the Chachamim over there in the Zohar are wondering, Taka, why are we going to a Beis HaKvaris, to Kibrit Tzadikim, to Davin? What happened to Dorosh on Mason? And the Zohar mentions because Tzadikim are not Mason, Tzadikim, Nafilu, B'Mistos, and Kruim Chaim, and therefore you don't have any issue with Dorosh on Mason in the first place. So the Gemara says, "V'hainu d'stiv." Thus, the pasuk says, "V'avdi Kolev Eikav Hoisa Ruach Acharas Imay." As far as my servant Kolev, Hashem says, because he had a different spirit with him, therefore he's going to get to go into Eretz Yisrael. So, in other words, the point is, first of all, the pasuk says, "La'aretz Hashem Bo Shama." He's going to be able to come to the land that he came to, namely Chevron, because we're saying he's the only one who came to Chevron. Or some of the Mefoshim say that all of them went to Chevron, but that only he went there with this motivation of davening by the Maris Machpelah. Marashah says, the Ruach HaCheres, the person has a Nefesh HaLekis and Nefesh HaBahamas. So he followed his Nefesh HaLekis, and therefore he was Zoycha to both Olamas. He's Zoycha to a place in Eretz Yisrael. Chevron went to him and his descendants, and he gets a place in Olam HaBa as well, unlike the other Meraglim. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula, Yedei Sivan, the end of Yemei Tashlumin. So the Rebbe talked about one time in a letter dated Yud Beis Sivan, we're now at the end of the Yemei Tashlumin of Shavuos, of Zman Matan Zeret Hazenu, and those are exactly that, they're the Yemei Tashlumin, and that's why, even in Chutz Laaretz now, we don't say Tachnun all these days, showing, in other words, that even after the Beis HaMikdash, even though we're in Chutz Laaretz, you still have this concept of Tashlumin in full, which is a hurrah to avoid in avoida, that we have the capability throughout these days to fill in, to make up for whatever we missed during those days, for whatever reason, whatever we might have missed on the day of Matan Torah itself, including the point that Ba'inim Lachem, that we have to have on Shavuos more than any other Yom Tov, we have to have a Lachem, we have to have a Suda that benefits, and a Simcha that benefits the body, so bring everything down, L'mata Ma'asara Tvachim. So we have until and including Yud Beis Sivan to fix that all, to finish that all up. Continuing with halachas of Yom Tov, so So we talked about, actually, we talked about smearing things on Yom Tov. So the question was brought up, what about, for example, peanut butter or things like that? And I'd mentioned the other day four things that everybody else ever pointed out. You're allowed to, let's say, for example, fine, you can put butter or peanut butter or whatever, but not to smear it smooth. You put it on the bread or you put it on the whatever, but not to, like, smooth it out and make it like, nicely smoothed out and shaped. That you can't do on Yom Tov. So yeah, another halacha in that connection. You can't put out a fire on Yom Tov, even a gram kibui. So for example, you can't put a candle in a place where the wind is going to put it out, even if right now the wind is not blowing. And the same thing would be to open a door or a window in front of a burning candle. You can't do that on Yom Tov either. It means, I guess, in particular, then when you're taking the candles by Shvat Chamosa, if it's a windy night, then I guess don't be doing that.